The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Dameshek. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. Welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available as always on iTunes, Stitcher, and NFL.com/Sheck.
S-H-E-K, Sheck.
Back at it. It's the month of December. Christmas will be here before we know it. In fact, it's been here, if you watch TV, for about the last 3 months. I think it was right around Labor Day. Maybe when night fell in Labor Day, I started seeing some Christmas commercials. In the meantime, hope you had a good Thanksgiving with the family or with your friends and had a good turkey bowl if you got out there for one. I certainly had a good one. We got football baby together with Mo, you know, my mother and my old man, and you know, baby Oprah was there and Jean-Claude Van Dameshek, the whole gang. We gathered around the TV. We watched three, I guess they weren't all three good games, but they were compelling playoff relevant matchups. We're going to talk about what we saw there and how it projects ahead into this final month of the regular season with our old pal from the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Ross Tucker is going to be with us in just a little bit. Always great fun yapping with him and always insightful. And always with some mirth mixed in there. And then, or maybe even before, we'll see who shows up first here. But coming here into Studio 66, Maximum Strength! Future Hall of Fame running back and my current colleague, LaDainian Tomlinson. Black tie behind the glass, get ready, because LT, as you know, he likes talking pro football, sure, but he also loves talking about NBA basketball.
So it's just going to be me and LT talking hoops?
Please. I think I can participate in a pro basketball conversation. We'll get into that. Oh, and also we have to kibitz with him because his TCU Horn Frogs are also relevant in the Final Four for college football chase. So we'll kibitz with him as well about that and also see what he thinks about his old Chargers making the big comeback against the Ravens. And by the way, we're coming at you on Monday afternoon. Monday Night Football kicks off momentarily. Football baby, I will say this, or not football baby, football turkey filled in. Football turkey filled in for football baby, who we gave the week off. Football turkey 2-1 on Thanksgiving Day, Monday night. He picked the Jets. Now, by the time you're listening to this, you may be laughing at football turkey, or maybe you will be in deeper awe than you already were of football baby's ability to divine who's going to win these football games. Either way, we have enough of a snapshot of the weekend to kibitz about it. In the meantime, let me tell you this, though. We have an exciting news, Black Tie. We have a sponsor now, and it's FanDuel.com. And, of course, if you're a football fan, you're now aware of what FanDuel.com is all about. The NFL season, like I just said, is not over yet. Neither is your opportunity to jump in on some fantasy football action. If your season-long fantasy football league isn't cutting it, and I know that in some of my leagues I'm into the postseason now, in others I am now on a hiatus until it's time to draft again next August. Get your mojo back at FanDuel.com. You pick a new team every week, like Joe Watson did. He's from New York City. He played fantasy football on FanDuel for less than 2 weeks last year. He won over $30,000. That's a lot of loot. Join him and the hundreds of thousands of others who've already won money. I love the fantasy football. Of course, I made my way kibitzing primarily about fantasy football the first couple of years here. I was at NFL Media, so, you know, I love participating in that. The money you can win here is real, and the fees start at just $1 to get in. No season-long commitment, no upfront fees. So get in on this. You got 4 weeks left in the regular season, and you can basically have a whole season four times over in each of those weeks. Go to FanDuel.com, click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, use my code DDFP, and sign up now. Is that good news for us if they use that, Black Tie?
It's great news for us.
DDFP is the microphone, is what you click into the upper right-hand corner there. New user special, ending soon. FanDuel will match your first deposit dollar up to $200. That's up to 200 simoleons free. Offer is only good for the first 50 people that use my code DDFP. Don't forget to use it. Again, it's DDFP. FanDuel.com, where every week is a new season. That's FanDuel.com. Sign up today. Duel, by the way, in case – do you know how to spell duel, Black Tie? It's a little tricky. Some people –
it's not that tricky.
D-U-E-L. Some people would go E-U-L. But no, don't do that or else you'll be wrong. I don't know what website you'll wind up on there. No, FANDUEL.com is the way to do that. Black Tie, how was your Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving was fun.
Did you eat turkey?
Well, I was here on Wednesday night just before Thanksgiving Day for like a good 12 hours putting together the Week 13 DDFP TV show, which if you haven't checked out on now, make sure you do that.
Or at least check out the individual segments. We did the ODB catch. Yeah, you should check out the whole thing, but you should, in the at the very least, go and look at the Odell Beckham recreation I did with my man Booyah, OD Booyah. You can find that, like we say, at NFL.com and NFL Now. Make sure you sign up for the app there. But did you get to eat turkey on Thanksgiving Day, Black Tie?
I did. Decent amount of turkey. I'm not a big Thanksgiving food guy. Same way with the pie off. I'm not a big pie. Like,
loss to miss out on that because people love the pie off. People sure loved listening to the pie off, Black Tie. So if you had missed that one, we had Dan Hanzus, we had Handsome Hank, we had Mark Iztook, we had Dylan Milner, some of the pals we work with here, they all brought in homemade pies. Well, Handsome Hank didn't, but just the same, it was very good. And so go back and listen to that. And, you know, gangbusters weekend of pro football action highlighted by, as I predicted, Aaron Rodgers over those New England Patriots. Let's get into all of it because I do believe Black Tie, is he about here? Oh, let's
here
stop down for a second. Yes, as promised, this is a great thrill. Having him here in Studio 66, Maximum Strength. Your first visit to the new studio here. One of the nicest guys you can bump into. Not as a former football player, but just as a nice guy to run into and kibitz with about all manner of subjects. Like I said earlier, NBA basketball chief among them. It's LaDainian Tomlinson. What's the poop, fella?
Oh, man, it's great to be in the new studio, Dave. Yeah. This is nice.
Do
you're
like
moving
it?
Up, man.
You think so?
You are.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you could make it up here to our little cave here that we call Studio 66. How was Thanksgiving for you?
Oh, it was great.
Yeah?
You know, Thanksgiving is always one of my favorite holidays.
Me too. It's my very favorite, I would say.
Yeah, I would agree. We had, you know, my wife cooked a whole bunch of stuff. I deep fried a turkey.
Did you do the deep fry?
I deep fried a turkey.
Love that. That's my favorite way because the skin is so delicious.
I can't go back now, Dave. Mm-hmm. I can't. Well, you know, once you deep fry turkey, you can't go back and bake one. I'm sorry. It's not the same.
I don't know what people always say. No, you got to try brining a turkey, but I don't even know what that means.
What?
I don't know what you do to brine a I don't know what that word means to brine. So anyway, yeah, the deep fryer. And the other thing is, it's a great communal thing because you get you and a chum or, you know, your brother-in-law or whoever. Right. You stand out there, you watch the bird cook up and everything.
But no, we've advanced, Dave. Yeah. We don't cook the bird outside anymore. It's done inside. This is new concoction, I guess a new deep fryer now. You lay the turkey on its side now, and you just lower it in into the deep fryer inside the house.
Wait a
believe
second.
Believe it, and you can close it.
I don't believe it, but I believe that you have such an item.
Yes.
This is available to regular civilians like myself?
Of course. Well, let me just say my wife found it, you know, so I don't know. You know, she's online. She ordered it from somewhere or who knows where she got it from. But the point is, Dave, we have one, and it's the best thing that I've ever had.
You know what's – wow, that's great. We could spend hours here talking about Thanksgiving food. Mm-hmm. What's the best side dish, though, in your book?
Sweet potato crunch. You know, you ever had the sweet potato with the pecans and
I do
the
know
cinnamon.
What you're talking about,
yes.
I have made – I've been talking for some time, and I brought it back in 2014, too. Stuffing is so good. Why do you suppose it's been relegated to just once a year? Shouldn't it be available year-round? Shouldn't we have stuffing as an option?
Yeah, but it takes so long to prepare and cook. Who wants to cook stuffing for a regular dinner? It's going to take you an hour and a half, 2 hours to do it.
Not
at least
problem.
That's what happens to my wife. It takes her forever to cook stuffing, man.
All right, listen, we have a great deal of things to cover here. I'm conflicted about where to start with. Let's go here. Final Four, everybody's buzzing, including I'm sure you with your TCU Horned Frogs in the mix for this Final Four in college football. Who's your pro football Final Four right now? How about not – well, first of all, give me who you think it's going to be, and what do you think would be the most fun quartet of teams to see get there on that last Sunday in January?
Boy, that is a good one. You know, to me, I think the final two in the NFC, Green Bay and Seattle, to me – and I say Seattle because there's something about – you know, the way Russell Wilson plays, mm-hmm. that he's always going to give his team a chance to win a game at the end of the game. You know, they're always going to be in it because of the defense, because of Marshawn Lynch. And I just think when you start to move into the playoffs, that is a formula, Dave, that always works. And so I look at Seattle, and then I look at the fact that, you know, Green Bay, the way they're playing right now, Aaron Rodgers, to me, is the best quarterback in the National Football League. We always talk about quarterbacks. Sure. You're going to have a chance to win games. And when you have the best one, he's going to put you in position to win most games than none.
Well, I completely agree with you. We saw what he did against what has been a surprisingly good Patriots defense on Sunday. Do you think, though – I mean, well, first of all, what a neat thing that would be. The first game of the season was, of course, up in Seattle. They mm-hmm. housed the Packers. They looked at – we thought, what, we're talking about the Packers as a Super Bowl contender? Not after that performance. But now in hindsight, you realize, well, no one was going to beat the Seahawks on that
night.
But if they have to – if the Seahawks then have to go up to Lambeau, do you think that the cold – is a factor? Does that somehow favor the Seahawks because Marshawn Lynch is such a banger that would wear down the defense?
No, because I think, you know, the Packers have something that equalizes Seattle, and that's Eddie Lacy, a big physical body that they can bam up and, you know, ram up in there inside and wear a defense down. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think Green Bay emerges because of the quarterback. And I'll just say this about that defense. You know, with Julius Peppers and Matthews and guys like that, they are the catalyst to put pressure on other quarterbacks. They can get to the quarterback when they need to. And so I think that'll be, you know, a determining factor when you're talking about who wins the NFC Championship. Now, on the other hand, the AFC, really, I mean, as much as I would love for my Chargers to sneak in and get back to the AFC Championship, boy, it's just looking like Denver and New England.
I hate that. It's the normal guys that always.
But you know what? Can you say Tom Brady and Peyton Manning? They continue to play at a high level. When are these guys going to get old?
Well, I still think that if you put a pass rush on either one of those guys, it's easier said than done. But when you start getting after them, they become very mortal. This has been one of my go-to opinions for years, and it always proves true. Neither one of those guys handles it well. So if they get the wrong matchup, they disappear. And but you know, maybe Andrew Luck can somehow sneak through there. But then you see what happens when they go up to Foxborough a couple weeks ago.
But see, with Andrew Luck, they have no pass rushers to get to Brady and Manning. That's the only concern of mine when you talk about getting to those guys. Which team has a group of, you know, you have to have a group of pass rushers. You can't just have one because teams do so much now. You know, they put an extra tight end over there on that pass rusher. They have the back chip, that pass rusher. So you have to have multiple rushers. And I'm just thinking, I don't know if there's a team that can get to those guys in the AFC.
Do you think that Johnny Manziel should start? And if he does start, do you think that the Browns wind up in the playoffs or regretting that they didn't stick with Hoyer?
I do not think that he should start. You know, Dave, I'm an old school type of guy. I believe you go with the horse that got you there. Mm. And you know, they're 7-5 right now. Hoyer is 10-5 as a starter. We've almost had a full sample size of what he can do. Now, is he a guy that you can depend on to lead your team up and down the field? No, absolutely not. But Hoyer can win for you if you have the elements and different things around him. So I think if they do end up going with Johnny Manziel, they will regret it. I don't think they'll win another game if they go with Johnny Manziel, because I think he still doesn't understand the NFL game. He still wants to take off and run with the football. And I'm telling you, even when he scored that touchdown, look at the shot he took right in his back. That adds up. And Johnny Manziel is a little guy.
Yeah.
You know, and so I just don't think, you know, it's going to work out. Now, you know, Who knows down the line if he learns to play in the National Football League and learns to play from the pocket? He's a very talented guy, but I think he still has a ways to go.
All right, listen, we'll see if we have time to come back around the NFL stuff, but a couple things. Let's talk about some other things. First of all, your TCU Horned Frogs. But first, your rushing record that survived all those years goes down 1 week and then the next week immediately. What? Yeah, how does that pop? Why do you suppose that's happening?
You know, I think it speaks to the point in football now where everyone wants to defend the pass. And so if you're a recruiter or a scouter, you're going out to recruit guys to defend the pass. You are not defending, you know, the run anymore. Back in when I played and even back before then, it was about running the football, and you had to stop the run to win. That was the belief in football circles. So you got guys, you worked on, you know, defending the run in practice. You did, you know, drills 9-on-7 and whatnot to stop the run. Now they don't do that. You know, it's all about the pass and stopping the pass and creating coverages and all these different type of things. Guys don't tackle the same no more. And so you get a beast in the backfield and give it to him. Once he gets to the secondary, those guys can't tackle, Dave. And so there's a propensity for bigger runs, which we are seeing, you know. And that's the reason why the record has fallen.
Well, it was a good long run for you. Classy for you to use the 21st century Twitter to congratulate him and everything, and then get to do it right back 7 days later. Or Melvin, I guess that Melvin Gordon, that was on him. He has
that
to
was
send
on him.
The congratulations.
Yeah. But I will say that I think it's Perrine. Yeah, Perrine, I think is how you pronounce his last name. It's welcome to the 400 Club. There's only three of us now.
400 yards in one game is crazy. So do you think – I know you're going to say the Horned Frogs belong in Florida State, Oregon,
Alabama.
Bama has to go. Yeah. But if they lose, they don't – no SEC team, right? I mean, there's just no case. You put Baylor and TCU
or
Ohio State.
I don't know. I mean, the way Alabama played the other night – even if they lose, I think you still have to say they're one of the four best teams. Physically, they are. You know, when you have guys like Cooper out at wide receiver, the way the quarterback has played, they have runners, physical defense, I think they still are
incorrect.
One of the four best.
Let me tell you why. It's the same thing as in the last year's NFC title game. Everybody said, oh, the Niners and the Seahawks are the two best teams in the NFL. But then the Niners lost. Nobody said, all right, well, they're still the second best team. Put them in the Super Bowl again. Let's just have the rematch. You lose. If you don't get through your conference clean, then you don't get to play for the whole thing.
But I don't think they lose. I mean, I think we're speaking in one of your favorite words, hyperboles.
That is one of my favorites.
That's one of your favorite words. I listen to you, Dave.
That's nice. So, I like listening to you talk NBA ball. What do you think so far? Here's a good way to marry pro football and pro basketball. Which conference is tougher? NFC or the NBA's Western Conference, which is more rugged right now?
I would have to say the NBA's Western Conference. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Probably all of the eight teams that will make the playoffs can win the West. If you think,
including your boys, the Houston Rockets.
Oh, of course. I think the Rockets might end up, because keep in mind, we haven't, and I speak like I'm on the team because I've been a Rockets fan since I was a little child.
Listen, you are a pro athlete, but let me speak on behalf of the fans. A guy who's been on a team for 2 years doesn't have as much ownership, doesn't have as much stake in the emotionally as the fan who's been rooting for 30 years for that team.
Right.
We're much more we. Hey, the Pittsburgh Steelers are much more me and we and us than a guy who's been, than Jarvis Jones, who's been there for 18
months. I agree.
But anyway, yes.
So we, you know, we haven't had our full arsenal of five starters to play, you know, most of the season. There's been guys in and out of the lineup. Dwight Howard has been injured. But the key for us, the key pickup this offseason was Trevor Ariza.
Yeah.
And I think that was huge because he's able to defend people. And I would say small forwards, LeBron, if we get to the championship and they get to it, we can defend LeBron now because of Trevor Ariza.
I think that was a huge
matchup.
Trevor Ariza cannot match up with LeBron.
And he can knock down shots like Chandler Parsons.
Yes, he can do that. So, that I agree. I don't think he can handle LeBron if he takes him down into the blocks there.
Well, yeah, that'll be tough.
You know, something we talked about a lot in the offseason, and, you know, Pete Carroll wins a Super Bowl in what feels like a, you know, like a happy time environment up there. Kobe chases Dwight Howard off. That's the way I see it, at least. We have people in L.A. don't like Dwight Howard because he abandoned their team. But to me, it was Kobe was a bully. That's just his behavior is antiquated. It's Bob Knight kind of, Vince Lombardi style. Is that a failing way to behave yourself, either as a coach or as a leader of a team, if you're the quarterback or a significant player, to get in guys' face? Is that now out the window?
I don't think it's necessarily out of the window, Dave, but I think there's a way you have to do it. You have to find a way to challenge guys. And some of the ways I used to challenge, you know, some of my teammates, I knew their personality for one. And so I would go up to a guy, you know, in the weight room during the week, and, you know, I would say something to Sean Phillips like, boy, you know, we sure need some sacks this weekend against Peyton Manning. I bet you're not going to get any, though. You know, something just to challenge, say, oh, okay, that's what you think. You have to find ways to motivate your guys on your team.
You're not starting anymore. And you should be starting.
Reverse psychology. That's Michael Robinson's way. That's what he does. Yeah.
And that's the way you do it. But Kobe, you know, he has a different approach. He's so hard. And I don't know where he learned that from, honestly. You know, maybe it was the way he kind of came up under that Laker culture. You know, he had to kind of wait his turn. Remember the playoff game when Kobe came in? He was just an 18-year-old kid, and he shot and missed everything. People were like, what are you doing? Why are you shooting the ball?
I remember that.
I think that kind of, you know, it built something in Kobe where he became very hard. And so I think he kind of takes it out on his teammates.
Yeah, he's got – I mean, clearly, you know, he's had off-the-court stuff. It's all amounted to a chip on the shoulder. You know, he was the number two to Shaq for so many years, and can he do it on his own? And I think he's a fascinating – I don't think he's a bad guy. I think he's a complicated, fascinating soul who 25 years from now we will really – I mean, there will be biographies, and you'll really pick him apart, and you'll look back and say, really, one of the more compelling figures the sports world's seen.
I agree.
LT, last thing for you because you played with Rex Ryan. Where do you think Rex is in 2015? In the broadcast booth, the Jets – San Francisco, possibly.
Yeah, well, I think San Francisco, I mean, that's another story.
Well, if they're going to trade Harbaugh, exactly. Maybe they trade him straight up for Rex.
Yeah, but, you know, Rex has that same kind of mindset. If they didn't like the fact that Harbaugh, you know, he likes to kind of stay to himself and not do all the public, you know, marketing stuff for the team. Rex, you know, Rex is kind of the same way, even though he speaks out in his press conferences. Rex is really not a guy that likes to talk to the media. You may think he does, but trust me, he just blows smoke.
I don't know why. This is my big thing for the – yeah, and I don't want to hold up LT. He's got to go do his fancy TV stuff. Thanks for coming in, LT. It's always a great pleasure to kibitz with you. LT doing great work off the field as well. And obviously make sure you check him out on NFL Network. But, you know, Black Tie, as LT makes his way off, I don't want to hold you up there, LT. But you can listen to my fascinating thoughts just the same. You know, I think it's – I don't understand what incentive. I like to talk. I would like to be out in front of the media and kibitzing and cracking wise and everything. But at this point, may as well just say, on to Cincinnati, no matter what. I mean, all you're going to get is ridicule. The Sean Payton thing, he's not allowed to disagree with Rob Ryan out on the field and all that. You know, Mike Tomlin's getting skewered in Pittsburgh. Just say, I can't talk about anything. I'm on to Cincinnati. That's all you have to do to brush things off because it seems like if you share an opinion, I have denounced the quarterbacks who do it more than anybody else. Actually, Phil Rivers, LT's old pal, is one of the few holdouts to this. But quarterbacks say nothing, and I kind of get it, because if you do say anything, then everybody rips you for it or picks it apart.
Don't you think
just say, on to the next game, on to the next game. Just keep saying that, and then the media will just have to leave you
alone.
Don't
you think we as a society, though, need to look at that, especially in sports media?
Yes, I hate it. I don't like it. I'm being sarcastic.
Why are we doing this whole PR nonsense? We need to stop. In this day and age of social media and all this stuff, like, let's be more honest. Let's be more upfront. And PR world still operate under the, you know, the rules of 20 years ago. Come on. Loosen up a little. Let's be real. Sports.
If you could be who do we love talking to on this show? We love talking to, and Ross Tucker is one of those guys as well, who's a straight shooter, and he'll be with us momentarily. But, you know, among the active guys, who are you? We love talking to Terrence Newman and Ike Taylor and A.J. Hawk because they say something. They tell you how they feel about things. I get the incentive not to say anything because somehow it gets warped into bulletin board material or somehow gets used against you or whatever. But I'm with you, Black Tie. Yes. Why the tail's wagging the dog? The organization doesn't want you to say anything because they don't want you to stand out as an individual. But so what? That all these guys are aware now of their individual brand, and so you think they would? Maybe it's their personal brand that gets in the way, and they don't want to misrepresent or offend anybody. And so I don't know.
Yeah, we could have more. I know Kobe has his ways. We just spoke about Kobe, but in terms of speaking to the media, he speaks freely. We could have more Kobe's.
True.
We could have more Richard Sherman's in the world, and nothing wrong would happen. It would be just okay. It would be just fine.
Listen, I love it. The WWE is predicated upon that sort of thing. Can't we take a page from the WWE? I think it would be fun. Black Tie, what do you think of a LaDainian feeling so strong? I love – that was pretty fun, actually, that he, like a regular sports fan, Wees and Us is his basketball team.
Gotta go Wee. Like when I talk Manchester United, I go Wee.
Well, yeah, but you're a regular like me. He's going to be putting on a gold jacket in a couple of years.
And that's a good point.
He's doing that about the Houston Rockets. Yeah, we had too much to talk about with LT.
Yeah.
I wanted to get into the Final Four of college football with him. Here's the thing with me. I'll say this because I've really been thinking about it quite a bit of late. And I said it a year ago, and I say it again now. That thing is going to be the greatest. I love me the pro football playoffs. It's my favorite tournament. But I think for true fans of a sport, the fewer playoff teams, the better. The reason playoffs expand and you put more teams in is because it engages a larger, same thing, like kind of, I guess, what we're talking about with personal brand and everything. The more inclusive you can be, the better for, you know, for the money and all that sort of thing. But four teams, no one outside of that is going to – Ohio State may complain if they don't get in. And TCU or whoever might complain if they don't get in. But – they have no claim to being number one. If you're that far from number one, if you're one, two, three, or four, all right, the third team, maybe the fourth team could say, like, yeah, things break right. We deserve to be called the best team in the country. Once you're starting to get down into five, six, eight, you have no claim. Your season didn't warrant you being in the top four. I think that makes it so that you really don't have a legit claim to it. I feel bad for Ohio State because they lose their second quarterback of the season, and so I'm inclined to say you can't put them in there. Remember when they did that in the NCAA hoops tournament like about, 12 years ago when Kenyon Martin ruined his knee and they were number one all year, and right before the tourney, they dropped them in the seedings? I feel that way here. It should be that way too. Ohio State just practically can't win the national championship with their third-string quarterback. But then again, if Ohio State were undefeated right now, if they hadn't lost to Virginia Tech, then there would be no argument. It wouldn't make a difference who, if you started me at quarterback, you still have to put them in if they're undefeated. It's very difficult choosing these four teams. But one thing is for sure, I disagree with LT completely. If Bama doesn't beat Missouri and they have two losses, no SEC teams, period. And that's the end of it. And you do put Ohio State into it. But anyway, I can't wait to see how that thing shakes out. And I am excited for these NFL playoffs, even if we decide that we should just skip them this year and just go straight to the Packers and Patriots, because that would be juicy stuff. I want to talk about that with our main man coming up right now, as a matter of fact. At Ross Tucker NFL is how you follow him on Twitter, rostucker.com. The Ross Tucker Football Podcast, plus a bevy of others. He does a fantasy one. He does a gambling one. All that stuff available for you on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever else you find podcasts. Here he is, everybody. Our old pal Ross Tucker. What's the poop, fella?
Nothing, man. Things got a little more interesting yesterday in the NFL. I mean, it's crazy, but you know, the Buffalo Bills and Miami Dolphins, they're kind of right back in it after your beloved AFC North had an awful, awful day, with the exception of the Bengals really benefiting from the Bucs having 12 men on the field, which usually doesn't go over that well in football.
Yeah, I know, and I wouldn't even call it a great day for the Cincinnati Bengals, who barely survive against the woeful Buccaneers. Plus, they had to look at those uniforms all afternoon long, looking across the line at them. That can't be good for anybody.
Yeah, I don't get it. I mean, I love their pewter and gold. I thought it was awesome. I'm sure you love the old school, you know, Bucko Bruce, knowing you a little bit. But either one of them is much better than what they're rocking right now. And I just can't believe the AFC North, which I thought was pretty beastly, it's a bad, bad day. And Pittsburgh and Cleveland, obviously, they just had terrible games. But Baltimore really let one slip through their fingers. The Bengals, like you said, just benefited from playing an inferior opponent. I still don't understand how they didn't count 12 guys in the huddle, how they didn't count 12 guys when they lined up. Like, if you think about it, Chick, Marvin Lewis did the NFL a huge favor. Otherwise, that would have been a really, really big deal. If they spiked that ball or ran a play before they figured out they had 12 guys, that would have been a big black eye for the league.
Yeah, I hadn't really considered that. You're exactly right. And by the way, as we mentioned at the top of the show, make sure you check out all of Ross Tucker. And there is a lot of Ross Tucker out there in the digital form and on television and in the written form, so on and so forth. He dominates the pigskin media out there. Follow him at Ross Tucker NFL and go to rostucker.com. The signature podcast, of course, the Ross Tucker. See, you and I get confused because I'm fancier than you. I go the Dave Damashek football program. You go Ross Tucker football show.
No, Ross Tucker football podcast.
Football says it's too much for me. So you're meat and potatoes sort of fellow, where I'm a fancy man.
We really need to change the whole name of the word podcast because it really, first of all, there's still a lot of people that don't know what it is. Second of all, I don't think it does a great description of exactly what it is that we do. And I think that people think that you can, like, only access it on your iPod. I mean, obviously, people listening right now don't care, and I'm totally wasting their time because they obviously already know how to listen to podcasts. But I talk to other people, and they're like, well, I don't have an iPod Touch. I don't have an iPod. It's like, dude, you can listen to a podcast on pretty much any device they create these days.
It's so true, and you know, people really need to get up to speed on this. And, yeah, you know what? There are a lot of guys, there are a lot of players who hear podcasts and they say, no, that's beneath me. That legitimately happens. They'd rather do something. Can I be on a radio show? Yeah, but the people listening to you, you're going to be in one city talking to that fan base. You could be on a show that goes out to the universe. But the people still get tripped up here in the 21st century on
have a captive audience that will listen to everything you say, not just the 7 minutes that they hear while they're driving to Home Depot. You know, I mean, it's not even up for debate, but you're such a big believer in all these nicknames and stuff and naming things, whether it's the LA Clippers or Aaron Rodgers. I'm giving you a task, Chef. You need to come up with a new name for the word podcast.
You're right. Well, listen, I avoid it. To me, it's a football program. There's no podcast in the title for me. But, yes, I need to do a deed beyond just myself and help out everybody else out there. Yeah, I'll do it. All right, let's talk about pro football here. Like you say, it was a banner week 13. Fascinating results all across the board. Where to begin here? I guess let's start with something that I've been thinking for the last month now. You know, a couple of years ago, or 3 years ago, I guess it was, when the Packers were 15-1 and it was clear on the AFC side that the Patriots were the class of the bunch there, it looked like we were on a collision course to see Brady v. Rodgers. They had the two worst defenses in the NFL, as I've said a million times before. I'll say for the million and first here, the final score to that game would have been 132-129 had those two teams played one another. But just the same, a great game in Lambeau on Sunday. Let's just skip the playoffs. Out of a sense of justice, these are the two best teams, not just this season, but over an era now. Clearly, the Packers, season in and season out, are always in the conversation of being the best team in the NFC. Same goes for the Patriots, obviously, over in the AFC. Let's just get these two together and settle it in Glendale, Arizona on February 1. How say you?
Sounds good to me, man. And right now, there aren't very many other teams that I look at and legitimately think they could crash the party. I mean, Denver certainly, with the way they're running the ball now, I love this C.J. Anderson. Mm-hmm. But the way they're running the ball, I think Denver could knock off the Patriots. And I'm sure, you know, the Seattle Seahawks, you know, maybe on a certain day, Russell Wilson makes a couple plays that they could beat the Packers. They already beat them once this year. I'm not really thinking Philadelphia would be able to get that done. So to me, there's about one team in each conference, you know, that would really have the ability to break up what you and I think might be a Super Bowl rematch. Which, by the way, what does it say, just as I'm talking off the top of my head, what does it say about the Broncos coaches and front office that every time a running back gets hurt, the next guy comes in and he's clearly better?
That's like, so true.
How is it possible? Like, all the evaluating, right? There's 20 coaches. There's all these scouts. They watch every tape and preseason games, and they watch every practice. How is it possible that they couldn't see that C.J. Anderson was better than Monte Ball? My mom could tell you that C.J. Anderson is better than Monte Ball.
I agree with this. And by the way, for a reference for people who are watching football in the 80s, I like playing that game of intergenerational who reminds me of whom. And C.J. Anderson is Joe Morris of the New York Giants reincarnated, yes?
Interesting. Isn't he bigger than that? Wasn't Joe Morris like 5'7"? Isn't this kid bigger than that?
He looks shorter to me. I don't think Joe Morris was that short, though, was he? He wasn't 5'7".
Joe Morris was pretty little, man. He was little. I have to look that up.
Hey, Fouts tie behind the glass. Can you look that up, see how tall C.J. Anderson is and how tall Joe Morris was back for the New York Giants? Yeah, so I'm with – yeah, I would like to see – and I don't necessarily know that the Patriots are superior to the Broncos, but like I said, I'd like to see these two number 12s get it on again. Because, you know, they're both likable fellas and easy to root for. And like I say – the Patriots have been the class of the AFC for a decade now. I'd like to see them get one more crack at it and Aaron Rodgers, because am I getting crazy too, by the way? I know you've heard me say this before. Am I getting loco when I say Aaron Rodgers, if he wins one more Super Bowl, goes down as the greatest of all time?
I think you are, because there's not a big enough sample size yet to say that. I mean, it's kind of like the Terrell Davis Hall of Fame debate, right? I mean,
No, not comparable. Aaron Rodgers has been dominant since his second season as a starter. Dominant.
Correct. But how many years has he done that? 6 or 7 years now?
I don't know, something like that. 7 years. Now we're getting pretty close.
So these other guys have done it for 15 years. So
longevity
is
nice. Longevity is a great quality to have as a professional athlete, but it's trumped by other characteristics. I mean, just because you hang on long doesn't mean that you're better than somebody else, of course. It's why I say Mario Lemieux is better than Wayne Gretzky. Who cares? Gretzky was in the league longer and healthy. So what? I mean, a nice thing to have, but it's not more important than other things.
No, I'm with you, but I believe that guys like Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, just in terms of the recent guys, we could go Montana, Marino, whatever, but just in terms of the recent guys, I think they've been utterly dominant for 15 years. So,
yeah, I guess
to me,
so.
If Aaron Rodgers won the Super Bowl this year and then got hurt next year or whatever, it's interesting because there's a different debate between whether or not he's the best quarterback ever and whether or not he had the best career ever. And I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Going back to scouting, I remember when he came out, like, how is it possible when you watch Alex Smith throw a football, and then you watch Aaron Rodgers throw a football, that any professional organization would spend 8 months and then say, and I like Alex Smith. I think he's a good quarterback. I think he doesn't turn it over. He's a smart guy. I'm an Alex Smith supporter, but I just don't understand how you could watch both those guys and say, you know what? We're going with Alex Smith. Like, what? I mean, if you watch those guys throw, I mean, the number one thing about the position is throwing a football. It's kind of a big deal when you're a quarterback. And when you watch those guys throw a football, it's just not close. And the weird thing about it is Aaron did not throw the ball this well in college, which is why every quarterback should call him and say, what did you do in the NFL? Like, what kind of rotator cuff exercises did you do? What when you're on the run, you don't even throw the ball. Laser beams come out of your wrist and magically appear in the breadbasket of any receiver you attempt to throw it to. I mean, it's like some
it's like Rookie of the Year. Did you ever see that baseball movie about the kid out in Wrigley Field's bleachers? And I forget even what happens to him, but he's suddenly imbued with the most magical arm in the history of mankind. Something like that must have happened to Aaron Rodgers, because when he was with Jeff Tedford at Cal, he was good, but he certainly wasn't, you know, he didn't have the whip that he has now. Something weird happened there.
No, it was the whole, you know, it was the whole system quarterback, and he would hold the ball with two hands, like, up around his ear. It just looked weird. Like, holding the ball up with two hands by your ear the whole time is not a good look.
Yeah, and yet you see a lot of the collegians do that. Yes, Fouts tied behind the glass. You have an update for us?
Yeah, C.J. Anderson is 5'8", and Joe Morris is 5'7".
Ah, we were both right. So 5'7", Tucker, you're right. But C.J. Anderson, also diminutive. 5'7"?
Well, I didn't know he was that short. Really interesting. Okay, I'm liking your comparison. Then.
Joe Morris was 5'7". That wasn't celebrated nearly enough. I know he was hailed as a little guy doing great work. I didn't know he was 5'7". That's getting close to Spud Webb height.
I don't remember him, and maybe it's just my recollection. I don't remember him being as good out of the backfield as. I mean, Anderson can catch everything. It's crazy.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, Joe Morris wasn't exactly a pass catcher. I just mean with the shift and the bulky thighs and all that stuff. But you mentioned Alex Smith, and that makes me think of something else. Just for 2014, whatever has happened in the last couple of years is water under the bridge. For right now, for this season, would the 49ers have a better record if Alex Smith were their quarterback than with Colin Kaepernick?
Yeah, I think they would. I really think they would. I mean, Colin Kaepernick, and you'll like this one, Chet. Colin Kaepernick is like the NFL's version of the curious case of Benjamin Button. Except, unlike Benjamin Button, he's not getting younger. He's getting worse. I swear the guy is worse every time I watch him play.
It is a mystery. What gives here?
I don't know how it's possible that every time I turn the TV on and I watch the guy, he got a little bit worse. Like, a little bit worse. I guess it's confidence. I mean, I don't know, but tell you what, one of the things I think happened is, and then it's not good for guys to have that much success that early. Everybody says he's such a hard worker. Well, how do we know when he's working so hard he's watching tape and not doing, like, curls and sit-ups? You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of different ways to work hard. It looks like he certainly spends a lot of time on his body. And there's nothing wrong with that, but who knows what that means. Secondly, if you look, check at all the guys that had success and lots of it in 2012, like, RG3 and Kaepernick, that was the year, even Cam to some extent and Russell Wilson, that was the year that a lot of the read option stuff really, really got going for the first time. You know, people hadn't seen that. That's why RG3's completion percentage was 70%. He was throwing all slants and crossing routes to dudes that thought he was within 5 yards because the linebacker stepped up thinking that they were going to run it. I mean, that scheme took the league by storm that year, and I think it skewed how we felt about those players. I think we're realizing that they're just not as good as we thought they were based on. I mean, remember that playoff game?
Yes, like, of course
Packers,
I remember.
Packers guys were running into each other because they didn't even know who had the ball. And meanwhile, Kaepernick had 842 yards rushing.
Yeah, and also, you know, and more recently in the playoffs last year up in Lambeau, Kaepernick was the difference in that game. I mean, he made some back-breaking long third down runs to keep some drives alive in the second half, and that was the difference in that one. So what, you know, because I thought, and I'm, you know, I remember the, you know, the nonsense a few years ago with the Dolphins and running the Wildcat or whatever everybody called that thing. And I knew that that was a flash in the pan. You figured, well, NFL teams are going to figure out how to stop a two-dimensional situation like that. But the read option is not that. It's a numbers game. How is a defense have defenses around the league figured out how to handle that? Because you're always going to have an extra offensive player on one side of the field, so you're always going to have an extra man to block the defender. How did this get solved, and now it's a pretty much a non-issue outside of, I mean, Seattle looks pretty devastating all of a sudden running that. When Russell Wilson is putting the ball into the gut of Marshawn Lynch and sometimes keeping it, that seems hard to really slow down, especially when you consider their best pass catcher is Doug Baldwin. And at least the last 2 weeks, or even the game in KC, if you look at that one, all these teams are having a ton of trouble stopping what should be pretty elementary stuff. One beast in the backfield and a running back and a quarterback who can take it around the end when he decides to. How tough can that be to stop? And yet, on the other hand, I'm asking you, why have defenses figured it out? Because I thought that the read option would be something that would last a generation.
I'm not sure they have, quote-unquote, figured it out. They definitely, for the most part, maybe with the exception of the Redskins and the Giants, who inexplicably had no answer for Russell Wilson running the football, which I still don't understand. But for the most part, they at least have a pretty good plan for it now. And, yeah, they have a number advantage. But remember, that number advantage is based on reading off of one guy. So, you know, if that guy closes, well, then the running back is done, right? The running back is done because that he is going to tackle the running back. So then a lot of times what they're doing is that backside linebacker doesn't have to worry about the inside run because the DN is going to close and take it. So if he scrapes over the top, he can make that play or at least slow the quarterback down enough that the safety can get in there if the offensive tackle or whoever can't block him. So I think they do have a better system for it, but I still would like to see these teams do it more. I mean, I think they go away from it because they don't want him to get hurt, and they want to show that their guy can be more than that. If you're Jim Harbaugh and Colin Kaepernick, it's like it's time to break the glass. I mean, it's time to break it open and go with it because desperate times call for desperate measures for both of those guys.
Yeah, that's exactly right. When you're watching that game on Thanksgiving night, that was what I was thinking the whole time. What are they trying? And yet, on the so you don't want to run around the guy you perceive to be your long-term answer at QB. It's inexplicable that they aren't productive throwing the ball when they have obviously a nice offensive line and Gore and Carlos Hyde is a banger as well. How they cannot get the ball into the hands of that bounty of receivers, including Vernon Davis, who is a mismatch week after week, is right up there. And then we'll get to the Steelers because they are another team that offensively makes no sense, where the sum of the great parts that they have is not amounting to enough points. But what about the Niners? Why are they not productive offensively with the gaggle of weapons they have?
I think it's mainly Kaepernick. Now, I don't think the offensive line's playing as well as they were other years, but I think it's honestly mainly Kaepernick. He's lost confidence. He doesn't really look like he's got a great feel for where he's supposed to go with the football. And you know, these were some of the concerns about him when he came out of Nevada because they ran that pistol offense. That was a little bit different. But those fears were alleviated with how he played in 2012 and then how he played last year in the postseason. But last year in the postseason was mainly a product of him running the ball a lot. I mean, that's why he had a lot of success, was running around. Well, I mean, for the Niners, their postseason starts now. I mean, their postseason actually started on Thanksgiving. They need to get him running because that gives them the best chance to open some of his other stuff up.
Oh, yeah. They don't win out. They have no shot at the playoffs, as rugged as the NFC is. Here's a fun hypothetical, Ross Tucker. I like playing the game of – I like doing it not just with current players. I like doing it across generations, but let's to trade players and see how they would fit and see how much we can evaluate it. Let's keep it current, though. Peyton Manning, if you put him on Washington this year, what's the record of that team?
Um, What is their record? 3-8
I don't know. Let's say, how about this? RG3 gets traded straight up for Peyton Manning. What are the how do the two teams, how much different are the two teams? What's the record of the Broncos right now if RG3 is under center for that team?
Denver Broncos with RG3 are 5-7.
No way. Really? They have their defense is very good. They have Demaryius Thomas.
Maybe 6-6. RG3 is terrible, man. He's terrible.
All right, maybe that's a little rough.
I feel bad for Redskins fans. He's terrible. He's another one that they got to go back to letting him run more. But the reality is, I was at the game on Sunday. He can't run like he used to. Like they said, he tries to get the edge, and he just can't get it. So 5-7, maybe 6-6. If the Redskins have Peyton Manning, I think they're 8-4. I mean, I think they're really good. I mean, you look, Shaq, and like I said, I was at the game yesterday for the Colts and Redskins on Sunday. I mean, Alfred Morris has more rushing yards than anybody since 2012. He's a stud. Roy Helu's a very good third down back. Jordan Reed is a matchup nightmare as a tight end. Then you've got DeSean Jackson, the biggest, the best deep catcher in the NFL. You've got Pierre Garçon and Andre Roberts is excellent number three. I think their offense would be pretty darn good. They have legitimate weapons there.
I agree. I'm disappointed by that. All right, let's do another one then. Tom Brady gets traded for Ben Roethlisberger. What are the records of those two teams?
Oof. I'm going to say that the Patriots would be 8-4.
No drop off
with Roethlisberger.
Not much drop off.
Now about a one game difference, maybe 8-4, 7-5, and I think that the Steelers would be 8-4, maybe 9-3. Probably 8-4, I'd say.
All right, let's talk about that team. What is wrong with that? The defense. You can excuse, you knew that there were some flaws with it going into the season. It doesn't help that their first-round draft pick for a second straight year, those two guys combined, Ryan Shazier this year and Jarvis Jones last year, have played about 2.5 minutes worth of regular season football in the last 2 years. So fine, the defense is crummy. That's excusable. How do you figure Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown and Ben Roethlisberger and Heath Miller, who's a little less than what he used to be, and Marcus Wheaton and you know, some nice offensive linemen? How can this team struggle the way they do? 6 points in the first half against that bum Saints defense?
I don't have a very good explanation for it. I mean, their offensive line is up and down. There's no question, which is such a shame, considering the amount of resources they've invested in that thing. Mm-hmm. You know, for them to not be one of the better offensive lines in the league is a real problem. And then I think they're used to the defense being better than this, which makes them play a little bit differently, but there is no explanation, especially when you consider that I'm into fantasy football now. I have a fantasy podcast called The Fantasy Feast. And check, Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell, it feels like they get their numbers every week.
I know. It's crazy. Believe me, I have them. I don't know if I have them in your league, though. I'm in the Fantasy Feast League, and my team is woeful. I think I'm in 9th or 10th place. It's not been a proud effort out of the Cool Cats this year in your league. But either way, yes, they put up Lev Bell and Antonio Brown are as consistent as it gets. As a matter of fact, Jordy Nelson and Antonio Brown – in an era of these monsters. I responded to your tweet on Sunday about that very thing. Isn't it weird that with Calvin Johnson and A.J. Green and Julio Jones and Brandon Marshall, the two best statistical guys at least are Antonio Brown and Jordy Nelson?
Well, Antonio Brown is just – he has special, special quickness. Jordy Nelson, I don't think people realize – he is a physical phenom. I mean, he's like 6'3", 215, and I want to say that he won the state of Kansas in a 100-meter dash,
that
running like
right,
a 10.4 or a 10.5. Like, you know, because of his skin color, you know how that goes. People will never really believe what they're seeing. And on some level, I almost understand that because it is not a frequent occurrence. anything that we see with our eyes that is a rarity, it's going to be tough to believe. And it is tough to see a white wide receiver. You're not used to a guy being that type of physical phenom like he, but he really is. I mean, 6'3", 215, and you win the state in the 100-meter dash? I mean, he's like, he's a freak, and I think it shows. Because he can make the back shoulder throws, the deep ball, the run after catch. Maybe he's not the best in the league in terms of high-pointing the ball in space and going up and getting it. But, you know, I saw your tweet. There's not a wide receiver in the league I would take over him right now. Maybe Demaryius Thomas, maybe. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that, I mean, Calvin Johnson's getting older. He's beat up. Brandon Marshall, same thing. I mean, a lot of these guys, I'll take Jordy Nelson and Demaryius and Antonio Brown as my three any day of the week.
You know, and it does make me go back and feel like I have to modify where we started with the, you know, the longevity aspect. You know, with Calvin Johnson, I've been saying for about the last 2 years or so, he's on track to maybe catch Jerry Rice in some significant career statistics, but he's not going to, and that really is admirable at that position. Calvin Johnson's window, for all his greatness, is really at his peak. We're going to look back, and it'll be about a three-year time when he really was just about unstoppable, but I get the same sense as you. I don't think, you know, 2 years from now, Calvin Johnson's name is, when we talk about who's the best receiver in the NFL, I don't think Calvin Johnson will be in the top two or three anymore.
Yeah, you know what's interesting about that is, as much as being a physical specimen is a great thing, I think there are aspects of it where when you're as big as he is, believe it or not, that position, I just think your body's more likely to break down. I just think, you know, to run that many routes, and he's just a bigger target to take shots from people. You know, Jerry Rice was very lean and mean. Mm-hmm. Antonio Brown kind of has that physique. Even if you look at guys like Reggie Wayne or Steve Smith that are still going strong out of my draft class back in 2001, which, by the way, is insane. I know how I feel after 20 minutes on the elliptical. These guys are still playing pro football. It's, like, crazy to me. But you look at the body types, and I think Rob Gronkowski's the same way. I mean, I love Rob Gronkowski. I wish I was Rob Gronkowski. I daydream about being Rob Gronkowski. But we're not going to be talking about him as, like, the best head in the league 3 years from now. I mean, the guy, he's so fun to watch, but he takes so many shots. He's got, you know, Barry Bonds, elbow guard thing popping off like he's RoboCop. I mean, the guy will say RoboCop out there with his arm things and his leg. There's no way 3 or 4 years from now that we're going to be like, man, can you believe Gronkowski's still running all these dudes over and still this fast and this, and this, that?
It's so true. It's counterintuitive because you see, like you say, these big guys, but the fact is they still are the ones taking bigger shots over that, you know, game to game. You know, it's the Earl Campbell effect. You know, you watched Earl Campbell run, it didn't occur to you that he was going to wear out pretty quickly because week after week, the toll that takes on him. I think he's maybe the best example that there is of that sort of things. I'm being told by Fouts-Ty that we're already coming up on a half an hour. Where did the time go? I thought we'd go about 15, 20 with Ross Tucker, but the time flies by when Tucker joins us. So, all right, real quick, because you got work to do. You got to talk about the Jets, and that does count as work. Yes, talking about football is pleasure, but when you have to try and make the Jets captivating, that's difficult. Real quick, Rex Ryan, Jim Harbaugh, they get traded for each other. Who does better? What would the Jets be like in 2014 if they had Jim Harbaugh and the Niners had Rex Ryan?
The Jets would be 3-9, maybe. I know. I guess they're 2-9 right now. 3-8.
So they still suck.
I don't know that they'd be that much better. And I think the 49ers, man, I don't know. I think it's almost a straight-up trade.
Do you? Because I feel like I have some fantasy, and this is not a popular opinion. Well, you know what? It's actually gathering momentum now. You know, the Steeler way is never to, you know, you never fire a coach no matter what, just about. But, you know, kind of quietly because of Ben Roethlisberger and, you know, to some degree, 500-yard passing games and 6 touchdown games and all that stuff and Antonio Brown and, you know all the good parts about these Steelers. But the fact of the matter is they lose to Tim Tebow in a playoff game. That's pretty embarrassing, and I can explain that one away because of the injuries the Steelers had on that day. But, all right, that's their last playoff appearance, is getting beaten by Tim Tebow. And then – now they've gone 8-8 and 8-8 and 8, and now they're headed towards another season where it looks like they're they have the Bengals twice, they play the Chiefs, and they play at the Falcons. How you think Julio Jones isn't drooling at the chance to go against that secondary? How are they getting 3 wins out of that one? They're going towards 8-8 again in my book, and or maybe 9-7. I don't know how long Mike Tomlin – this feels like, you say, what the expectation of the Steelers are. They bear the weight of what the fan base and what the ownership thinks they're supposed to be, defensive and run the ball and mighty and all that kind of stuff. I wonder if they do think about, if this team misses the playoffs, saying goodbye to Tomlin. And if they did, Rex Ryan would be a juicy fit and one, to me, that would last for 15 years in Pittsburgh.
Well, number one, they're not going to fire Mike Tomlin.
You really don't think there's any chance? You don't think the Rooneys consider it if they go 8-8 again this year?
No, I think he's put on notice, and he's very much on the hot seat in 2015. That would be my guess. That 2015 would be a make or break year for him at that point. And I know Mike Tomlin has that certain style when he talks and people like it, but I don't see Rex Ryan's style being a great fit for the Rooneys. They come across to me as being pretty conservative, and I think that Rex Ryan now, even though he's reeled that back in a little bit, that they would not like that. You know, let's put it this way. The Giants would never hire Rex Ryan, because his style doesn't fit John Mara's style, and I always look at the Rooneys and the Maras as being very comparable.
That's a fair point.
Well,
yeah.
I think Rex is a terrific coach. I don't think that the Steelers would do that. I don't think that they'll do that. By the way, I think Harbaugh for Rex Ryan, the more I think about it, would be a pretty good straight-up trade.
To
me, it's like the sheepdog for the moped in Dumb and Dumber. Like, straight-up, you know. Both sides were happy about it. You know, both got what they wanted out of it. Change of scenery. Although he's going to get traded to the Raiders, so it's a moot point.
Yeah, I get the sense that his family life for Harbaugh makes him want to stay in the Bay Area there. And last thing, and it's something I've really been wanting to do for 3 months with you, and now we'll have to do it real fast. You know, I always go to depth is the biggest factor, not an elite QB or who your head coach is or anything, but depth is what makes teams win championships in the 21st century. That's the consistent factor. But I'm starting to now lean towards it's the offensive line. If you can, you know, the Seahawks are relevant suddenly now because that line has come together, and it looks like no matter what you do, you can't stop that gigantic man. Marshawn Lynch running the ball the way he is. And the teams that are good again this year are ones that can keep their QB upright and, you know, and run the football some. So if I'm right about that premise, who is that now positioned to make a deep run in January?
Well, that's music to my ears, although, you know, there have been some years. That 08 Steelers offensive line was horrendous.
I agree with you. I'm saying now. I agree. The Steelers, that was a bottom 10. That's also why I hold Aaron Rodgers up above Brady or Peyton or Breeze, because Rodgers renders it a moot point because he moves the pocket around wherever he wants to go to create the passing lanes he wants to create, whereas those old guys don't.
Yes, but that offensive line played really well against the Patriots. I mean, there were times when he had all kinds of time to throw. Packers' O-line's playing well right now. Philadelphia is starting to get a crack in. Dallas struggled on Thanksgiving, but they're still good. Denver, it looks like, has finally decided on who their five are going to be. You're right. I mean, what matters is how well you're playing in December and January. And what really probably matters the most is is winning up front. Like, that's why the Broncos beat the Chiefs. I thought the Chiefs were going to win the game because I thought they could win it up front.
Yep.
The Broncos controlled the game up front, both sides of the ball. And you know what? The Packers, I thought, beat the Patriots up front when it was all said and done, both sides of the ball. And that's who won the game.
It is remarkable, and you know, it's one of those cliches, and I get so tired of all the cliches, and I know you do too. One time, so, I mean, I know I always say, here's what we have to do the next time, Tucker, but really, you and me need to hash through and really make the comprehensive list of cliches that we don't need to hear anymore. I mean, I really get...
Well, I mean, I'd be happy to do that, Chet, but I'm just taking these programs one at a time.
I cannot
look forward to my next appearance. I'm just taking it one at a time. Because all I can do is, like, you know, it is what it is, and I can only control what I can control. So I'm not going to worry about, you know, the next time I come on your show.
Well, we got to dial this up because in the National Football League, you're a young man at the position of broadcaster who really knows what he's doing, and you're all that and a bag of chips. Yeah, I mean, the cliches are making me crazy, and the stuff that passes off for insight. Now it's just all you have to do is say, hey, I played with that guy, and that counts. You don't have to have any anecdote behind it. The broadcasters now, the analysts now just say, yeah, that guy was on my team, and then people guffaw about it. I don't know what goes on with the analysis these days. But by the way, it was made better.
Don't get started, bro.
What's that?
I said, don't get me started.
Well, I thought it was a lot better. Listen, I enjoyed your coverage of the Harvard and Yale game. That was good stuff. We need to see Tucker,
man,
in the booth.
Yeah, that was fun. More. Let's talk about that sometime, too.
Let's do that, too. And last thing, because it's Shecky Award time, you know, it's the month of December now. So get us started. Whet the appetite. Best TV show for Ross Tucker in 2014.
Oh, my gosh, dude. I can't tell you the last time I watched a TV show. Oh, I know what it is. The Goldbergs.
The show is
incredible. I love that show.
The Goldbergs is not the answer I expected from Ross Tucker. But, see, that's
no,
what's
it's
great
awesome.
About.
The 80s. It's all about the 80s and Philly, where I'm from. It's incredible. If you're not watching that show, you're missing out.
All right. I'll try to tune it in. There's some other good ones out there. All right, listen. Ross Tucker, speaking of good shows, nay, great shows, the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, available on iTunes, Stitcher as well, right?
And everywhere where podcasts are found.
And,
yep,
of course, you can track it down, rostucker.com, and make sure you go to, and on Twitter, follow him, at Ross Tucker, NFL. Ross Tucker, you're one of the best in the business, and always a pleasure to kibitz with you. You're a swell fella to boot, and hope Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, is treating you well.
It really is. Thanks for having me, as always.
All right. Have a good time at the Jets game and Dolphins game tonight, and hopefully we'll kibitz sooner rather than later.
Sounds great, man.
All right. There goes the great Ross Tucker. I feel unsatisfied on one hand. On the other, I'm over the moon because I feel like this was a gangbuster show. LT and Ross Tucker in one show. It's an embarrassment of riches, and yet I feel like we could have done about 7 to 9 more hours with them. And I feel like there's a lot of meat on the bone. I guess that's good, right? That's the way you want it to be.
It's a good
show.
You
want to feel like we didn't have anything, like about minute three, I'm out of things to talk with you about. I could have kibitzed with either or both of them for quite a bit longer there. But anyway, so now I jump on an airplane. And I fly off to Chicago, Illinois for the week to watch the Bears and the Cowboys get it on. I'll be up there with Matt Money Smith and Michael Fabiano. And I'm not sure who else, but I guess a bunch of people because Thursday Night Football, that's your TNF game. So I'll be up there. I guess we'll do – or when are we going to do a podcast, Black Tie? We'll squeeze one in before the end of the week to give you the Red Challenge Flag pick segment, right?
We should. You're a busy man, busy schedule.
Yeah, we should do that. It's week 14 coming up.
Let's make
up.
It happen.
There are only four more regular seasons. I know.
Is it that time of the year where you do a check report about the season?
Oh, no. That's
going
usually,
too fast?
That usually happens usually around week 15? Five. No, week 5 the season's going too fast for me when I realize, wait, we're a quarter through it already? Slow down, everybody. It's already too late to say that because college football's done now. Now they've got a couple of conference championship games, Army and Navy play. They hand out the Heisman, and then that's it. But at least this year we get that sweet Final Four. And, of course, in January we get the greatest tournament of all, the NFL playoffs. So, all right, we'll wrap it up there. We'll be back later in the week. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't get you a podcast until Thursday or Friday, but be on the lookout for it, the always entertaining Red Challenge Flag Pick segment. We'll get that for you in front of Week 14. Thanks in the meantime to Ross Tucker and to LaDainian Tomlinson. Back later in the week. Looking forward to seeing everybody up in Chicago. Thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.